on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is a great day because we're going to make it. So remember, it's a choice. Each and every day, if you can decide, it's going to be a great day. I have decided this is going to be one of them. So before I tell you who's on the show, I want to answer some of the questions I've been getting about my China comments earlier in the week. Premier Xi, the guy who looks like Winnie the Pooh, if you've seen him and you know what I mean, you will immediately see Winnie the Pooh in his face. He hates it, and it's been banned to make that joke or comment in China, but that helps you see who he is. And anyway, I think that he has been overthrown. Yes, I do think there's been a military coup. Yes, why? Mostly because the economy has been collapsing. There are so many videos out on YouTube of 25-year-olds who have given up and are just living at home and are not even going to try to have a career. There are stories of entire shopping centers being empty with no one there. It seems like something created an economic downturn. It maybe was the Trump tariffs. Maybe it was some of the natural disasters that have been happening, but the Chinese economy has collapsed. And the idea that they are a threat to us, I think, has been completely obliterated here in the last month. They have a huge construction problem, millions and millions and millions of square feet sitting absolutely empty, whole towns, cities that are empty, but have 100 skyscrapers in it that they've built that no one can pay for. Their largest construction company, Evergrande, has gone bankrupt. And we're looking at a situation with 100 million people who can't find jobs. And because of that, there has been an overall downturn in the entire economy. They had the worst season of natural disasters, floods that have ever been seen. The big bridge that they were so proud of collapsed. Thousands of primary, secondary, tertiary roads and bridges have collapsed. It's unbelievable the amount of problems that they are dealing with. And so expect a hard Christmas for shopping for toys and clothes. All that made in China stuff is going to be hard to find because I think the factory that makes it is closed. And anyway, those are my comments. Let me tell you who's on the show. First up, we have Teresa Kane. She has a new book out on product management and how to design a project so that it is effective. Great information, and I think you will really learn a lot. And then famous New York investor, entrepreneur James Altucher is with us. He has 20 companies that he has started, written 20 books, and is one of the cornerstones of the entrepreneurial movement and the society of all of us. Great information that he shares. It's one of those old greatest hits that we're getting back up on the new server. So appreciate you being with us, and we'll get started in just a second with Teresa Kane. We are back again, and thank you so much for being with us today. Very excited to introduce another great entrepreneur. Please welcome Teresa Kane to the show. Very impressive career in the design of new products space. She has, I'm going to have to make sure I get all of this right. All right. She is the founder of Lucid Startup Consulting, which helps us get better at all of the things. She is a coach, speaker, and a startup helper. She is also one of the instructors, or the instructor of the highest rated course on Udemy, which is product strategy and road mapping. And then also she has a class, 2-hour design sprints, learn how to solve problems in just 2 hours. So very successful with her classes there. It's been awarded bestseller and number one new release in business technology. She is also a very active speaker and was awarded the 40 Under 40 by Ingram Magazine. She won the Emerging Scholar Award in 2023 from the International Conference on Design Principles and a lot of other awards as well. Very impressive career. And we're here today to talk about both of her books, perhaps. Her first book was Problem Solving in 2 Hours, and recently is just released Next Gen Product Management, Future Proof Your Career, with two co-authors that have also appeared on the show, either have recently or soon will appear. Teresa, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jim.
It is my pleasure. You're very busy. My goodness, you're doing a lot.
Yep. I think the word is overcommitment, but I love it.
Do you have shiny ball syndrome?
Maybe it's FOMO, you know?
Yes. Afraid of missing out on something? I don't know.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, you need to be a circus caller then, because you haven't done that yet.
I'll add that to my list.
Let's go to the 2 hour idea first, that we can solve a problem in 2 hours better than in 5 days. Walk me through that. That's a really interesting thesis.
Yeah. And actually a thesis is what it was. I actually created the thesis out of my executive MBA program and turned it into a book based on the research. And since then, I've delivered keynotes and hands-on sessions to teams at Priceline, Amazon, Microsoft, Tesla, Vanguard, many others, and have had a lot of success in solving problems in just that 2 hours. So ultimately, it's really just a time-boxed approach that really takes the best of both worlds from design thinking and design sprint and allows teams to get out of their head and just kind of create a problem solve. So companies will bring me in to do this for them, or I'll just provide them the process to do it on their own. And 80% of the time, that number is the number I gave you last time I was on the show. 80% of the time, it works.
Very cool. And is it just a brainstorm? I mean, is that the centerpiece of this?
It's a little more than a brainstorm. So really, you are focusing on a couple different elements, during that. So you have a problem in mind that, what's going on? Is it you're not getting user adoption, or perhaps you're targeting the wrong audience, something in mind, and it doesn't have to be limited to products. I've actually run this with teachers and students as well with different problems going on. But for the most part, you have a problem, you want to have a solution for it. And you basically have that framed up to kind of be able to review that as a team. So the very first thing that you really do there is you understand the problem. You think about who your users are, who you're trying to solve the problem for. And honestly, I coach a lot of startups, and that's really the first failure of a lot of companies is they're not really thinking about the user and they're not talking about users. They're just building a product because they think it'll be successful. And then from there, you're really exploring it a bit more. You're getting feedback and you're creating a solution at the end of it that is ready for customers. So that's kind of the high level.
All right. Your new book, congratulations, Next Gen Product Development, Future Proof Your Career. I love that, the title, especially Future Proof Your Career. Explain it, please. What's the new book about?
Yeah. In my first book, I touched a lot on like how AI was changing a lot of things for a lot of different roles, especially product management. And that's exactly what that next book captures is next gen product management really focuses on what's happening, what are the changes going on with AI, and how can we prepare for it? And all the concern is a lot of people feel AI is coming for their jobs. There's also, I obviously have a framework with my other book, so I am a fan of frameworks, but there's a lot of frameworks out there, right? So which framework should I follow? What framework is going to work for me and really helps guide people that are wanting to get into product management today and aren't able to find a job? They're, having up against a hill against AI, and they maybe just don't understand all the different frameworks and how to use them.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. Do you think that AI is going to come for this particular industry? Design is supposedly what it's good at, and not design in terms of creativity, but you know, if you tell it what to do, it can do it, right? Is it going to come for the creative functions? Are you worried about it taking people's jobs?
I think it's already coming for it. And I would say I'm not worried about it taking jobs. I'm worried about the people that aren't using it to enhance their skills in the job. You know, so the teams that I manage as a director of product UX and design, we're actually using AI on every front from beginning to end. So in the beginning, we might write up a user story and put all of our thoughts in there, any research we've done, and then we're having, you know, ChatGPT rewrite it. And once the design team is done creating designs in Figma, the engineering team is using Claude to, you know, write the user stories for that. And so we're not fully replacing, our engineers aren't fully coding, you know, using AI, our designers aren't, you know, fully designing using AI, nor are our product managers, but there's functions of their role, probably around 30% that are being augmented with AI, which means I might not need to hire one more product manager or one more designer because of it. So I would say it is reducing the need for fuller teams, but not eliminating it.
You know, I think the thing that scares AI or scares entrepreneurs the most is they don't know what to do with it. They're told that it will do all these great things. Okay, like what? And, oh, it'll help you with this. And then you hear all of these pie in the sky things and they have no idea where to get started. Help them. Where should they start, Teresa, in learning the first thing that AI can do for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just dive right in. I know you touched on in the beginning, I've got a couple courses out there on product strategy and 2-hour design sprints out on Udemy. And that's actually a lot of, I dip right into AI in those courses. And the reason why is for people that don't know how to get started, you have these people that want to be entrepreneurs, maybe they're entrepreneurs down deep, or they already are one, but they don't have a fully staffed team. Products like ChatGPT allows you to have another problem-solving person right next to you to say, hey, what do you think of this? Like, how would you take this a step further? And ChatGPT, I think, for those that aren't familiar with AI products, is the easiest to use. I would say ChatGPT is great for brainstorming. If you're looking for something that's going to be more robust for design, I would use Claude, or I would use a tool called Lovable, as ChatGPT is a little behind in that. But all these tools that are coming out here, they're getting better and better and better. And even writing code, you know, beyond the design. So you could take a whole week and come up with your requirements, your personas, your design and your product and the code for it and launch your mobile app or website in a week, all using AI.
I spent a whole weekend just watching YouTube videos on different AI ideas that the different people were throwing out there on YouTube. Some of it was junk, but some of it I learned quite a bit and came up with some good ideas. And so it is just getting in there and using it. I think the prompt could be more helpful. You know, maybe it could ask you questions to help you get started for the neophytes or something. Is there a,
absolutely,
is there a visual, video product, AI product that you like yet? I cannot find one that I think is any good. What are your thoughts on the video? You know,
yeah, on video create, like it'll automatically create the video for you.
Yeah, or anything, any video tools for AI.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have toyed around with a couple different ones, but one of the things that's really interesting going on is I think it was YouTube actually recently said this week that they are going to start banning any videos that are auto created by AI. And so I think that's the biggest fear, right? Is you have these people that might be themselves, or they might be using some sort of avatar in place of them and they're creating videos, or they're just using an AI product altogether to replace it. And you can spot the fakes. There's a lot of fakes out there, a lot of fake videos. So I'm not really a huge fan of those. I prefer kind of creating something organically, because right now what's happening is it's being caught everywhere. So I would say that I don't have a favorite one in mind just because of that.
Okay, that makes sense. YouTube and their rules are pretty scary and you got to live with them. So
absolutely.
What do you do, Teresa, when you're not creative? How do you get back to your creativity and find it again? Do you ever have writer's block, quote unquote, instead of project development block?
Yeah. You know, I'm a very creative person. So I would say it's really rare for me to not be creative. But I think for me, I have a creative time. So my creative time is at night. So between 9 p.m. and 2 a.m., that's when I'm most creative. And I find it harder to be creative during the day when I'm on meetings or, you know, running different sessions. But if there is something where I feel like I'm not being very creative, I like to go for a walk and just kind of think and have my thoughts to myself. And usually that's when I have some of my best ideas, when I'm having a problem being creative.
So I know that you're working with pet companies right now. How does the process work when your boss or a client or whoever comes in and says, "Teresa, we need a pet product. We don't really know what it is. We just want a pet product. Give me something cool and different and unique in the space." How do you handle a request like that? Where would you start? How would you walk through that process?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And yes, so I'm currently the director of product UX and design for Yorgi Pet. And we've got a brand new product launch coming out later this year. So I'm super excited about it. And we'll be excited. Include? So I can't share exactly, you know, because it's a brand new product, right? And there's some IP there. But once it's ready to go, like I'll be talking all about it, I know, on the socials. But ultimately, you know, it solves a need that's not there today, and something for pet owners of the like. And so this is a product, a B2C product versus B2B. And what I love about this role, I've actually been there around 4 months and maybe a little longer, maybe 4 or 5, 6 months. But so I love, we're basically creating a 0-1 product. So that's exactly what happened. What you just described is, hey, there's possibly this need out there. Can you go research it and help define it and turn it into a new product? So that's absolutely what my job is over the product UX and design team, is understanding what the problem is, talking to users, validating the data, and then helping really create the vision for this product. And it's really exciting and invigorating. So I'm loving it.
All right. So let's go through one. I want a dog, a leash that walks a dog and a cat. Okay. So there's what we want. Our ultimate idea is a product for one dog and one cat to walk simultaneously. Okay. How would you go through it now? So what's the first step that you would do to start the process of that particular product?
So,
Teresa, let me interject. Yeah. My pets, my dogs, or actually all of our pets, we have two cats and two dogs, have been certified by PETA as having the best pet names in the United States. By PETA.
Love it.
Yes.
I mean, it can't get better than that. So
that's right. So our last name is Beach. And so we have Sunny, Beach, Wavy, Ripley, and Coconut, and Tiki Hut are some of our pet names. So anyway,
I love it.
I am a good pet namer. Maybe you should have me come up with the names for your new product in the pet industry, because I am PETA certified as the best namer in the United States.
Well, Jim, I'm going to have to get your feedback on the name when it comes out.
There you go.
You know, see if you like it.
So, cat and dog walking leash. What's the first thing you would do other than telling your boss that he's crazy?
No. So, very first thing that I would do is I would go reach out to pet sitters that walk cats and dogs at the same time. And first of all, find out if that's a thing or not. I am not a cat owner or a cat lover. I'm a dog lover. I'm allergic to cats. That's the only reason why. But ultimately, do many people walk their cats like dogs is probably the very first thing that I would go to understand, right?
It's a new trend.
And then, a new trend. Well, I've also seen a lot of people pushing cats in strollers. And that would be the biggest question for me, is understanding, do people walk their cat? Do they carry them? Do they push them in a stroller? How do they get them around? We know this happens commonly with dogs. And then from there, being able to develop either, saying it's going to be a leash would be too forward, right?
So you're right. I put you in a bind from the beginning, didn't I?
Right. Right. So we will need to understand what's the problem. How can we walk a dog and a cat at the same time? And what are the constraints there? And then from there, you know, maybe it ends up being some sort of stroller that has a leash attached to it. So you've got, you know, the cat on the inside and a dog on the leash or something. But again, moving too forward, but discovery is key. And then, you know, learning from those users is how we get to the right solution.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. I like that process. All right. What about the current generation of people that you're seeing? Are you seeing people 10 years younger than you that impress you or make you go, huh? What did these people learn in school? That's a trademark choice, by the way.
I love it. I love it. You should do it more on more of your podcasts. So I am a geriatric millennial. And so it's interesting because 10 years younger than me, I think would still be a millennial and not Gen Z yet. But so I think, you know, millennials have really gotten a bad rap, which is funny because, you know, I'm in this, I think they actually came up with another name for my generation of millennial. But no, I mean, I'm actually seeing, I'm inspired by what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing what I'm reading of people saying that millennials and Gen Z are lazy. I'm seeing the exact opposite. I'm so impressed with the ideas that are coming out of this generation 10 years younger than me that I'm figuring out how I could utilize their skill set more quickly. And so the biggest thing that stands out is really efficiency. So this will be kind of presented as laziness online, and it's not laziness at all. They're more efficient and they're able to get things done quicker, and you need to give them work faster to keep up with how they're thinking. So I actually have had people, 10, 15, 20 years younger than me, all the way to 20 years older than me, work for me the last 10 years. And, I think it's impressive from what I'm seeing.
So in the last decade or so, not as much recently, but let's say a decade ago, Apple, I thought, had the best design in the world. And there was that guy named Johnny Ive, supposedly, who worked at Apple and was the guy in charge of all their product design, from what I understand. And I think he left, and of course, Steve Jobs died. And I don't know that their product design has been anything special in the last 5, 6, 7 years. I certainly haven't seen anything new from them. Who would you say today is a company that's blowing you away with product design? Who do you see out there doing a work that's just really impressive?
Man, are we talking about physical products?
Anything, software, physical products. I know that that's, you know, a hard distinction to make in this conversation. Anything. I don't know who to respect now. Who should I be paying attention to and respecting?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of companies. I mean, I will say, like, I migrated my design teams over to Figma several years ago, and Figma was almost acquired by Adobe. You know, that acquisition was shut down. But I am loving what I'm seeing in the building Figma. And again, I lean more towards that product design space there. So a lot of the products that I see are ones that I use every day and I love, you know, because I'm using them there. So so that space is really blown up, and that's a product that I'm a big fan of. And then you'll see shortly behind it are products like Miro and Mural. And I believe all three of these companies are now, you know, billion-dollar organizations. So that space in the design world has really morphed from being an Adobe shop and Envision all the way to these three new players. So to me, they're kind of leading the way there with that. But I guess I should add, I know there's quite a bit of VR headsets. And if I'm going to stay on the more progressive side, what that space looks like. The MetaQuest has been something I have played around with, and I was actually asked to run a virtual 2-hour design sprint in a virtual world. I was asked to run a session on that. And so I think that tech is interesting. What's the future of VR headsets and where that's going and how that's being used with these new generations that we just talked about as well?
You know, I think the VR headsets is a great example of bad design in the beginning, wasn't it?
Right.
No one liked them. They were clunky and just not workable. You know, couldn't wear them for more than 5 minutes. Your neck would hurt. So.
or you'd get dizzy. I mean, honestly, I still think they have some ways to go, but that's absolutely right. But they're hitting this next generation, right? They're hitting Gen Z, they're hitting Gen Alpha, and they're getting bought in, and they've overcome those barriers to what's now a $500, $600 device, depending which version you get. I know they've got some cheaper models as well, but if you want the best experience, you got to pay the highest price.
Yes. As well you should. I mean, I'm a capitalist, and even when it sucks, I still have to stick to that. So, very interesting, Teresa. You wrote a book with two co-authors. How is that? How did you work together? How did you deal with it when someone else produced a really ugly paragraph? Talk to me about the process of writing a book with two other very highly opinionated people.
Great job, kind of. Yeah, it's tough. But if you think about it, it's more than two people, right? Because you have editors involved that are piecing together. So there was a lot of decisions in the process of, are they going to merge our work? Are we each going to own separate chapters? And I thought the editors did a really great job of merging and being able to tell a story of our work together. So I thought it went really smoothly. We all had kind of assigned areas that came together, and we each have a unique perspective from our backgrounds. And so I thought it went pretty well, and I'd definitely do it again.
All right. How did you work it out in the end? Did you go chapter by chapter, or how did it work out, process?
Yep. We did each write, the book was split, 33% a piece, chapter by chapter. And then basically pieces of chapters were kind of merged together, with similar topics and so forth. But actually that's what I loved about it the most. Having written an entire book, by myself, minus a foreword and an insert piece, that was much more time consuming. It took me a lot longer. Whereas when you're working with other authors, the challenge isn't writing your chapters. The challenge is making sure you're not telling the same story twice. And how do we make sure we're not repeating or we're, differentiating and telling our stories enough throughout our different styles?
And how do you unify the style? Do you even try to do that? Or are you just let writing styles stay? Do you, maybe run it through?
Yeah, lots of guidance. Guidance and formats. So everyone had kind of like a format they needed to follow in the writing of it. So a little bit of coaching on like, hey, try to write like this, whether it's first person or third person, and talk about things in this way. Stay away from politics. Lots of different advice throughout it.
Yes. And what about getting it published?
Yeah, getting it published as well is the other key thing. So I don't know if you remember from the last time. So I actually had talked to a couple large publishers and had some offers for my first book. And I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And, one of the publishing companies, they had kind of said to me like, hey, we want to publish this, but we own these specific rights and this is what you can and can't do. And at the first time, I had already been, generating things for the 2-hour design sprint, and that didn't make any sense to me. So I actually had created my own publishing company. So Lucid Creative Press, I own that. And the staff of editors and creative that do covers, all of that are part of that Lucid Creative Press. And I went that route again. We could have gone down the route of a large publisher again. There was interest. But at the end of the day, you lose your creative ownership. And when all three of us are entrepreneurs that already have careers that are selling different things, it doesn't make sense to go with a publishing deal where your book might come out 2 hours later and you lose all the creativity ownership in what you're writing and publishing.
Yes, I hate that piece. But on the other hand, have you ever heard of McGraw-Hill actually coming after anyone's rights for an educational product or anything like that? I have never heard of it, of the publishing company actually going after or using those rights. Have you?
I mean, it wasn't McGraw-Hill. I don't want to throw the place under the bus, but it was a pretty well-known, if not a top 5, a top 10. And there was a specific contract that limited what I could and couldn't do.
Yeah, I had that contract too. That's what I'm saying. I had the exact same contract, and I can't they never did anything. And I don't know anyone who, okay. I just wonder if that's actually ever enforced or looked at.
I'm sure it's pretty challenging. It's more the fear, right? I mean, I would say the same could be said. I've got a course in Udemy Business, right? So technically I'm only supposed to do X, Y, Z outside of it, but do they enforce that? Are they researching to make sure you're doing it or not doing it? Of course I haven't broken any of the rules, but it's that fear, right, that they instill in you with it.
I don't think they're competent enough to know what's going on.
Maybe I should be less of a rule follower, Jim. I should just start breaking more rules. That's what you're telling me.
Well, as an entrepreneur, you have to. You know, that's part of being an entrepreneur. You have to break some of the rules. And I'm not impressed with the publishing company, so I love the idea that you created your own. That makes a lot of sense.
But I'll say to that, though, I don't want to say that forever because I am working on a third book and there is some interest. So I think there is a world where hybrid could work.
Why would you go back to the other side now? What can they offer you that would be appealing?
Actually, it's something I had never thought about. So my first book, actually the second book is selling in multiple countries as well. But my first book is selling in like 29 or 30 countries. And it's selling so well in a specific area outside the U.S., a very well-known publisher has asked to buy rights to it, to own that and sell it. And so that's a hybrid model I hadn't really thought of maybe I own the rights in the U.S. where I have my brand, but I sell the rights for other countries. And so that's what I'm exploring right now.
Very interesting idea. Teresa, how do you get in touch, follow you online, get copies of your books, all that, please?
Absolutely. Solving Problems in 2 Hours and Next Gen Product Management are both on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, you name it. You can reach me on LinkedIn or on my website, Teresa-Kane, just Teresa-Kane.com.
Fantastic. We'll talk to you in a couple of years with the new book. Teresa, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
And we will be right back.
I think it's a great question.
It's great. Great question.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Okay, that's a great question.
It's a great question.
Those are two great examples. Great, Jim.
Jim, I think that's absolutely perfect. That is exactly it.
School for Startups Radio.
Welcome back to School for Startups Radio. I haven't given my favorite piece of advice recently. I want you to go home, take your remote control, place it underneath a rock 500 times, throw away the pieces, and never waste time on the television again. As an entrepreneur, you are going to be too busy. I am very honored and excited to introduce you to my next guest. His name is James Altucher, and he is an entrepreneur, a best-selling number one New York Times best-selling author. He's written 11 books. He's done some angel investing, and he writes for the Wall Street Journal, TechCrunch, Forbes, and a whole bunch of other places. He's been profiled in the New Yorker and Business Week twice. It's an incredible honor to welcome you. James, thanks for being here.
Jim, thanks so much for having me on the show. It's a great honor to be on the show.
I know, James, that you've made $400 billion, and then you lost $400 billion, and then you made it back again, and then you lost it again, and you're in the process of making it again. Tell me your story. What's going on here?
Well, I probably started over 20 businesses, and I probably failed at about 17 of them. So I try a lot, I experiment a lot, I fail fast, and I try to recover fast, although it's not always so easy. And one time, I had started a business, sold it, and did stupid things, lost everything. Unfortunately, lost my house, got a divorce, and I was really afraid I was going to lose my family. I have two kids, and I was literally lying there on the floor thinking to myself, how could I do this again? Because this wasn't the first time this had happened to me. This has happened to me over and over. And so I kind of took a look back, and it wasn't so as simple as I'm describing, but I kind of took a look back and I said, well, what was working for me on the way up and what stopped working for me on the way down. And, you know, it was a real painful process to pick myself up off the floor, because when you are on the floor like that, it's all your best thinking for your whole life that took you to that point on the floor, and you have to kind of radically change your thinking. But I took a step back and realized that I needed to be a little more physically healthy than I was. Like, I had to take care of myself. I had to be a little more emotionally healthy. Like, I had to be around, instead of being around bad business partners all the time, I had to be around people who loved and supported me and who I trusted and so on. I had to be mentally healthy, which means I had to start getting back to my practice of writing down 10 ideas every day. Like, if you, your ideas are almost like a muscle. And if you don't exercise that muscle every day, it atrophies very quickly. So I write every day since then. I write 10 ideas down every single day. It could be business ideas, book ideas, ideas for other companies, whatever. And then finally, I had to practice my gratitude muscle. Instead of always complaining and whining about my situation, I had to find every day new creative things to be grateful for. And I have to say, just that process alone, as simple as it sounds, was life-changing for me. So I my life has been changing ever since, and you know, mostly in good ways. So I'm grateful for that.
All right. So, James, I wrote down four things. You spent more time on your physical health. You are more emotionally stable now and get away from bad people. You exercise your creativity muscle every day, and you are more attuned to being gracious and having gratitude towards others. That's an amazing outlook for life right there. Is it that simple? 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah, but you know what, though? It turns out to be not so simple. Like, you would think it's simple, but one time, you know, I've been writing about this for about 5 years, and one time someone wrote me and said, James, I love all your ideas. I've been applying them. I come up with tons of ideas every day, and then on Friday nights, I go out drinking with my friends, and they just laugh at me and bash all my ideas. What should I do? And I wrote back to them, and I said, well, it's very simple.
Get new
just
friends.
Stay home. Yeah, just stay home on Friday night. Like, don't go. And I never heard from them again. So I don't know if some people, you know, so what I always suggest is, you know, do this, try to improve 1% a day. You know, 1% a day compounds, makes you 100% better, if that makes any sense even, makes you 100% better every 72 days. So just try to, you know, if you're having trouble sleeping, try to sleep a little better, you know, turn the computer off a little earlier in the day, improve your sleep hygiene just a little bit better each day. If you're having trouble writing down 10 ideas, but you can write down 4, okay, maybe tomorrow write 5. You know, every day, just try. Humans shouldn't have fixed goals. Humans instead need progress to feel happy. And so try to have progress every day as opposed to a fixed goal that you need.
All right. I have to ask you this now, James. Are you happy?
You know, happiness is an interesting phrase because it's totally, I don't want to get too technical, but happiness is triggered by a bunch of neurochemicals like dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, and endorphins. And the body metabolizes those chemicals very quickly. So let's say you're happy. You win the lottery. You're happy. Well, it turns out lottery winners are often very depressed a year later because the body metabolizes that happiness right away. I would say right now, in general, I'm a peaceful and calm person, much more so than I was before. I used to be a very anxious person. I always used to complain. I always used to worry about going broke. And right now, I'm just calm. And, you know, I always say that the best indicator of a successful tomorrow is a successful today. And the way I can be successful today is to be as calm as possible today. And does that lead to happiness? Yeah, you know, most of the time, I can enjoy a pretty sunset and be happy about that.
I just want you to know, James, I appreciate you so much for sharing and opening up. I was also bankrupt, divorced, and I was also really sick at the same time, and I had 2 little kids as well. I can really relate to all of that. But I'm sitting here looking at the titles of your books,
choose yourself, what to do when you're rejected, the power of no, because one little word can bring health, abundance, and happiness, 40 alternatives to college, I was blind, but now I see. You write really happy books. Your books are abundantly cheerful and motivational, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, not so much motivational, but I sort of feel that, listen, we live in a really scary time. Like, the economy has turned upside down since 2009. And, you know, I'm on the board of directors of a billion revenues employment agency, for instance. And so I see what's happening throughout the economy, usually months in advance of everybody else. And, you know, in general, people are very uncertain about their employment, their health insurance, you know, what new taxes are going to start, you know, replacing the old taxes. There's no more corporate safety. The myth of let's go to college and then let's get a job and then let's retire 40 years later, that is over. And so people are scared and they're nervous and they're anxious. And we need, you know, in general as a society, a little more stability in our lives. And so what I try to do in my books is teach how to find that stability inside yourself so that you can then have the stability in your career, in your financial choices, in your emotional choices, and so on.
James, if I were to talk to the gurus, 99% of them would say you have to have goals and write them down and hold yourself accountable by sharing them with others, yada, yada, yada. However, you just said a minute ago, no goals, but daily progress. Care to defend that?
Yeah, like I like to live by themes rather than goals. So for instance, if your goal is to make $1 million, well, what are you going to do after you make $1 million? You're going to have a new goal. So, but if you have a theme like, okay, I want to always provide value to people, and everything I do, I want to provide value to people, then I can guarantee you that money coming back to you will just be a byproduct of that theme. So, because, you know, the more value you provide to people, the more value comes back to you. So, or another theme is, I want to be a great musician. Okay, so I want to be involved in the music industry because I love music. So that's a good theme, but there's lots of ways to explore that theme. There's not just one goal, like having a hit record or being a great music agent or whatever. There's lots of ways to explore that goal. People limit themselves when they have a single goal, like I need to be a New York Times bestselling writer, or I need to get that promotion, or I need to, you know, meet a top 10 model to marry. Like, they sort of limit themselves drastically when they have goals, because we're no good at perceiving our best interests. Like, nobody can predict the future. Nobody has been good at deciding what's good for them in the future. So, but you're much better off living by a theme that's much easier to live within, much more pleasant, much easier to deliver value to others.
If your creativity muscle has atrophied and you can only come up with one new idea a week, how do I get to your, I won't say goal, but your theme of 10 ideas a day written down? Teach me and my listeners how to be more creative, please, James.
You know, it's simply a matter of repetition. So you just have to every day write that. I started this practice in 2002, and every time I stopped doing it, 10 ideas a day, I would lose all my money, literally. So I write down 10 ideas every day on a waiter's pad, because you can't really go over too much over. You can't write a novel on a waiter's pad. Like, you're going to have to just bullet point your ideas and get it done. And waiter's pads are cheap, so nice and frugal. And they're always conversation starters in business meetings when I pull out my waiter's pad. So I write down, you know, if you can only come up with two, that's great. Try to come up with three the next day. Or make your theme of the day a little easier. Like, if I wanted to, you know, come up with 10 ideas how Amazon can be improved, that's one theme, or 10 book titles I can write. Or maybe I'm going to take Monday's list and take Tuesday's list and combine them and see, I call that idea sex, see what idea comes from combining the two lists. So there's lots of different ways to kind of inspire new ideas. But the most important thing is just repetition, because that exercises the muscle. You want to keep writing down ideas until you feel your idea muscle sweating. Like, you know, today, for instance, I wrote about 10 ideas where I think how the 21st century will change, like 10 important demographic trends. And, you know, I was sweating by this 6th or 7th idea. It was hard to finish my list.
Then what? So I have an incredible list. Do I post that as a blog sometimes? I have 10 titles of books I want to write, 10 ways to have better sex life. How do you follow through with your list and make it actionable, please, James?
I like that these list suggestions you're coming up with. So, that last one you said should definitely be actionable, but not every list has to be actionable. You're really, the goal, what's happening here is you're exercising the idea muscle. If you come up with 4,000 ideas a year, most of them are going to be bad. 99% of them are going to be bad ideas.
Brainstorming, yep.
Yeah, so you just want to kind of come, you're just exercising the idea muscle so that when you really, I always see this happen. If you do this for 3 to 6 months, you're going to become an idea machine. And just ideas are going to flow so that when you really need to come up with good ideas, you're in a meeting and everyone's stuck for ideas, they're going to all turn to you and you're going to be the guy with the ideas. So that's really what's happening here, is that you're not going to come up with the next Google on your pad today, but you're going to be the guy that everyone's going to turn to when they need ideas. And that results, I can tell you, that results in money, because often what happens is I'll write 10 ideas for other people. Here's what I think you should do with your company. Here's what I think you should do to expand distribution on your radio show. And then I'll send it to people with no expectation that they get back to me. But often people do get back to me, and often they want to pay me to help them figure it out. And it's a lucrative practice to come up with 10 ideas a day when you share them with others.
I love it, and it's giving back. Does this lead to shiny ball syndrome, James? You know, ooh, I can do this too. Ooh, wait, I can do this also. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, the thing is, you just realize quickly that most of the time you're just exercising the idea muscle. And once you're like what I call an idea machine, you'll know right away, oh, I'm not going to do this idea. I don't really feel like it. But I might try to implement one out of 200 ideas or 300 ideas. And then what I do is, when I really feel like if something excites me, then I'll make a list. You know, execution is just a subset of ideas. So I'll make a list of execution ideas about the thing that excites me. So, for instance, if you have a radio show, I can have 10 ideas for apps based on the radio show. And then I can say, okay, well, the next execution step is I could sketch out each app. I can outsource to India through Craigslist or some other website, and so on. So that, you know, you start to come up with ideas that are next execution steps. And then if you ever feel like not executing, then you just give up and you move on to the next idea.
Tell us about your newest book, Choose Yourself.
Choose Yourself is really about how in this economy, if you don't choose yourself, someone else is going to choose you, like a boss or a college or a colleague or the government, and the result is not going to be so pleasant for you. Like, you really have to take, you meaning the individual, has to take charge of their freedom in this world, in this economy, because everything has turned upside down. And so, and this doesn't mean be selfish. This means just take control of your career decisions, whether you're going to be an entrepreneur or what I call an entrepreneur, you know, being an entrepreneur within the organization, but just completely take charge and don't ever rely, don't ever put your chances of success on the shoulders of anybody else, because it's not going to work out for you. And then, this is not selfish, because often the best way to choose yourself is to help others. Again, providing for value for others will always boomerang to help you. And that's the general theme of the book. And again, it's related to this physical, emotional, creative, and gratitude muscles that need to be exercised. And I tell my own story through the book. So it's worked out quite well.
All right, but what are some of the actionable steps that we need to take when you're choosing yourself in a non-selfish way?
Well, again, what's going to happen is, you know, and people ask me this, and it is really as simple as improving 1% a day across physical, emotional, creative, and gratitude, because what's going to happen is you're going to naturally come up with the ideas and the techniques to improve your life circumstances. You'll have ideas for your boss that he can implement. You'll have ideas for other companies. You'll be physically healthy enough to execute on these ideas. You know, but also I start to talk about things like public speaking, salesmanship, negotiation, you know, kind of the skill sets required to, you know, succeed in the choose yourself economy, which is where we're at.
It is. It's really scary what's happened with the economy and the way, with absolutely no fault of your own, your entire division can get outsourced, downsized, right-sized, anything like that. Do you encourage... Go ahead.
It is scary, but that's why I don't rely on anybody else. It took a long time to get to the point where I'm not relying on anybody else, but I don't like to depend on anybody for my financial success. Like, if you write a book, I self-publish my books now instead of relying on a publisher. I used to publish my books through traditional publishers. Now I self-publish. I prefer to be an entrepreneur than to work for a company, or I prefer to work for many companies, you know, via consulting, so that no one company can hurt me. You know, I wouldn't work for the government, for instance, because that could go any which way.
Right. And is this possible, as you said, to be an intra-employee? Even then, can you not be responsible to your boss or the vagaries of the market?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little more difficult when because you have to stay within the confines of the organization, and the organization hasn't been defined by you. But if you are actively helping colleagues, and I always encourage people to help colleagues across divisions within companies. So if you're at a big company, help people in marketing, help people in sales, help people in accounting. If you're really building bonds across you know, the different divisions in the company, it's as if you're running your own little business within the company, and you become more resilient. You know, when the mass layoffs come, either they can't fire you, or as soon as you're fired, they're going to instantly hire you as a company to help them solve all the problems that they can't solve anymore.
Can you get venereal disease from idea sex?
Well, your ideas can. Like, they might get worse and worse, but in general, your ideas find happiness through idea sex.
I love it. And let's take idea sex a step further. It's taking Monday's list, cross-referencing it with Tuesday's list. Is that a good beginning definition of idea sex?
Yeah. So for instance, let's say one day your idea is, you know, what are going to be the fastest growing companies next year? And so that might be Monday's list. And then the next day might be, if I had my own company, what are the 10 best ways I would stay in touch with customers? And so imagine then you send your idea to Apple Compute, you know, Apple, here are the 10 best ways you should be keeping in touch with your customers that you don't currently do. That's idea sex.
I love it. James, how can we follow you, get in touch with you, or buy some of your books?
Well, the best thing is you can find out everything. Everything's linked on jamesaltucher.com. And so my last name is spelled A-L-T as in Tom, U-C-H-E-R. So jamesaltucher.com.
Fantastic. James, thank you so much for being with us and opening up and sharing your life and for all your remarkable work. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
We're out of time. Have a great day, everyone. Be safe and go make $1 million. Bye now.